Jensen didn't want to die. She knew she had thought that she did, but she knew now that she didn't. It was her only life, her precious life. She didn't want to lose it. She tried to swim toward the surface, toward the light, but everything seemed so slow, so thick, so heavy. Jensen. The voice sounded urgent. Jensen. Something bumped her. She saw flashes of iridescent green. It was the snake. Could she would have screamed. Struggling but unable to get away, she could only watch as the dark length of the thing underneath rolled up around her. Jensen was too exhausted to fight. Her lungs burned for air as she saw herself sinking down through the shafts of light, getting farther and farther from the surface, from life. She tried to swim to that light and air, but her leaden arms merely waved, like weed drifting in the water. It was surprising to her, since she could swim. Jensen. Now she was going to drown. Dark coils surrounded her. With all her clothes on, her heavy cloak, her knife, her boots, and as weary as she had been, not to mention her surprise and her half-breath before going under, her ability to swim had been overwhelmed. It hurt. She had thought drowning would be the sweet embrace of gentle waters. It was not. It hurt worse than anything had ever hurt. The feeling of helpless suffocation was horrifying. The pain crushing her chest was sharp and unbearable. She desperately wanted it to stop. She struggled in the water against the pain, the panic, consumed with the urgent need of air. Her throat was locked tight, terrified she might gasp in water, so badly did she need a breath. It hurt. Jensen felt the coils of the snake under her, touching her, caressing her. She wondered if she should have tried to kill it when she'd had the chance. She supposed she could pull the knife now, but she was so weak. It hurt. The coils pushed against her. In the silent darkness, she had stopped struggling. There was no reason. Jensen. She wondered why the voice didn't ask her to surrender the way it always did. She thought it ironic, since she was at last resigned, that the voice didn't ask, but only called her name. Jensen felt something bump her shoulder, something hard. Another bumped her head, then her thigh. She was being pushed against the bank where the roots went down into the water. Almost without realizing what she was doing, she seized the roots and pulled with sudden desperation. The thing under her continued its gentle push up. Jensen broke the surface. Water sluiced off her head in a sudden rush of sound. Mouth wide open, she gasped wildly at the air. She pulled herself up enough to throw her shoulders up onto the knotted roots. She couldn't drag herself the rest of the way out of the water, but at least her head was up, and she could breathe. Her legs dangled, drifting, floating in the water. Panting with her eyes closed, Jensen clung to the roots with trembling fingers to keep herself from slipping back into the water. The desperate pulls of air felt wonderful as they filled her lungs. With each breath, she could feel her strength returning. Finally, inch by inch, hand over hand, pulling against the roots, she managed to drag herself up onto the bank. She flopped on her side, panting, coughing, shivering, watching the water lapping only inches away. She felt giddy with the simple joy of breathing air. She saw then the snake's head break the surface, easily, gracefully, silently. Yellow eyes in the black band watched her. They stared at each other for a time. "Thank you," Jensen whispered. The snake, having seen her there on the bank, seen her breathing, seen her living, slipped back into the water. Jensen had no idea what it had thought or why it hadn't tried to kill her again when it had an easy chance at it. Maybe after the first time, it thought she might be too big to eat, or might suddenly fight back. But why help her? Could it be a sign of respect? Maybe it simply viewed her as competition for food and wanted her out of its territory, but didn't want to fight her again. Jensen had no idea why it had pushed her to the surface, but the snake had saved her life. She hated snakes, and this one had saved her from drowning. One of the things that she had feared most had been her salvation. Still trying to catch her breath, to say nothing of recovering her wits after coming so close to passing through the veil into death, she began moving again, on her hands and knees, crawling up higher. Water ran from her clothes and hair. She couldn't get to her feet yet, didn't trust her legs yet, so she crawled. It felt good just to be able to move. Before long, she had recovered enough to stagger to her feet. She had to keep going. Her time was running out. Walking revived her further. She had always liked to walk. It made her feel alive again, like her old self. She knew she wanted to live. She wanted Sebastian to live, too. Hurrying through the tangle of vines and thorny shrubs, over the twisted roots and among the trees, her worry eased. When she came at last to the place where the rock began to rise up from the mossy ground, she started up the spine of rock, relieved to have found the landmark among the trackless swamp and to be climbing out of the wet, boggy bottom. It was getting darker by the moment, and she remembered that it was a long way up. Jensen desperately didn't want to spend the night in the swamp, but she didn't want to be scaling the spine of rock in the dark either. Those fears spurred her on. While there was still light enough, she had to keep moving. When she stumbled, she recalled how in places the ground dropped off precipitously to the sides. She admonished herself to be more careful. No helpful snake would catch her if she plummeted off a cliff in the dark. While she made her way up, she kept going over in her mind everything that Althea had told her, hoping that something in it might be helpful. Jensen didn't know how she could get Sebastian out, but she knew she had to try. She was his only hope. He had saved her life before. She had to help save his now. She wanted desperately to see his smile, his blue eyes, his spikes of white hair. She couldn't bear the thought of them torturing him. She had to get him out of their clutches. But how was she to accomplish such an impossible task? First, she had to go back there, she decided. Hopefully by then she would think of a way. Tom would get her back to the palace. Tom would be waiting, worrying. Tom. Why had Tom helped her? The nugget of that question stuck out in her mind, like a landmark to an answer, like the spine of rock led up and out of the swamp. She just didn't know where it led. Tom had helped her. Why? She focused her mind on that question as she trudged up the steep rise. He said he couldn't live with himself if he watched her go out into the Azrith Plains alone, with no supplies. He said she would die, and he couldn't let that happen. That seemed a decent enough sentiment. She knew there was more, though. He seemed determined to help her, almost as if he was duty-bound. He never really questioned what it was she had to do, only her method of going about it. Then did what he could to assist her. Tom said she should tell Lord Rawl about his help, that he was a good man. That memory kept nagging at her. Even though it had been an offhand comment, he'd been serious. But what had he meant? She kept turning it over in her mind as she ascended the rise of rock, up among the trees, among the limbs and leaves. Animals, distant strange creatures, called out through the humid air. Others, more distant, answered with the same echoing whoops and whistles. The smell of the swamp rose to her on hot waves of air. Jensen recalled that Tom had seen her knife when she'd been looking for her purse that had been stolen. She had pulled back her cloak, only to find that the leather thong from her purse of coins had been cut. He had seen the knife then. Jensen paused in her climb and straightened. Could it be that Tom thought that she was some kind of representative or agent of the Lord Rawl? Could it be that Tom thought she was on an important mission on behalf of Lord Rawl? Could it be that Tom thought she knew Lord Rawl? Was it the knife that made him think she was someone special? Perhaps it had been her pressing determination to go on a seemingly impossible journey. He certainly knew how important she thought it was. Perhaps it was that she had told him it was a matter of life and death. Jensen moved on, ducking under heavy limbs drooping down close over the rock. On the other side, she stood and looked around, realizing the darkness was quickly descending. With a renewed sense of urgency, she scrambled up the steep slope. She recalled how Tom had looked at her red hair. People were often worried about her because of her red hair. Many thought she had the gift because of it. She had often encountered people who feared her because of her red hair. She had used that fear deliberately to help herself stay safe. That first night with Sebastian, she had made him think she had some kind of magical ability to protect her if he harbored hostile intent. She had used people's fear toward the men at the inn. All of those things churned together in Jensen's mind as she climbed ever upward, gasping for breath at the strenuous effort. Darkness was enveloping her. She didn't know if she could still make it through in such conditions, but she knew she had to try. For Sebastian, she had to keep going. Just then, something dark swept up right at her face. Jensen let out a clipped cry and nearly fell as the dark thing fluttered away. Bats. She put a hand over her racing heart. It was beating as fast as their wings. The little creatures had come out to snatch the bugs that were so thick in the air. She realized then that in her surprise, she might easily have stepped back and fallen. It was frightening to think how a lapse of attention in the dark, a fright, a loose rock, or a slip, could put her over an edge from which there could be no return. She knew, though, that remaining in the swamp at night might be just as fatal. Weary from the day's struggles, the sudden scares, she climbed, stumbling in the dark, feeling the rock, groping her way, trying to stay on the ridge and not wander off what she knew to be steep drops to either side. She worried, too, what creatures might still come out in the darkness to seize her just as she thought she was nearly free of the swamp. Althea had said that no one could come into the swamp by the back way. A new worry gripped her. Maybe after dark, Tom would be in danger. Under cover of night, one of the creatures might venture out of the swamp to snatch him. What if she reached the meadow only to discover Tom and his horses mauled by the monsters, created out of Althea's magic? What would she do then? She had worries enough. She told herself not to come up with new ones. Jensen stumbled suddenly out into the open. There was a fire burning. She stared, trying to reconcile it. Jensen! Tom jumped up and rushed over. He put his big arm around her shoulders to steady her. Dear spirits, are you all right? She nodded, too exhausted to speak. He didn't see the nod. He was already running for the wagon. Jensen sank down to sit heavily on the grassy ground, catching her breath, surprised to be there at last and relieved beyond words to be free of the swamp. Tom ran back with a blanket. You're soaking wet, he said as he threw the blanket around her. What happened?
I went for a swim.
He paused at mopping her face with a corner of the blanket to frown at her. I don't want to tell you your business, but I don't think that was a good idea.
The snake would agree with you. His frown tightened as his face drew closer to hers.
Snake? What happened in there? What do you mean the snake would agree with me?
Still struggling to get her breath, Jensen waved a hand, dismissing it. She had been so afraid of being caught down there in the dark that she had virtually been running up the steep hillside for the last hour, on top of the exertion of the rest of it. She was spent. The fear of it all was catching up with her. Her shoulders began to tremble. She realized then that she was clutching Tom's muscular arm for dear life. He seemed not to notice, or if he did, he didn't comment on it. She drew back, despite how good it felt to feel his strength, his solid, reliable form, his sincere concern. Tom protectively bunched more of the blanket around her.
Did you make it through to Althea's?
She nodded, and when he handed her a water skin, drank greedily.
I swear I've never heard of anyone ever making it back out of that swamp, except going in the other side when they were invited. Did you see any of the beasts?
I had a snake bigger round than your leg wrapped around me. I got a pretty good look at it, more of a look than I wanted, actually. He let out a low whistle.
Did the sorceress help you then? Did you get what you needed from her? Is everything all right then?
He halted abruptly and seemed to rein in his curiosity.
Sorry, you're all cold and wet. I shouldn't be asking you so many questions.
Althea and I had a long talk. I can't say that I got what I needed, but just knowing the truth is better than chasing illusions. Concern showed in his eyes, and the way he made sure the warm blanket was covering her.
If you didn't get the help you needed, then what will you do now?
Jensen drew her knife along with a breath to steel herself. Holding the knife by the blade, she held it up before Tom's face so that the handle was lit by the firelight. The worked metal that made up the ornate letter R glimmered as if it were covered in jewels. She held it out before her like a talisman, like an official proclamation cast in silver, like a demand from on high. That could not be denied. I need to get back to the palace. Without pause, Tom scooped her up in his massive arms, as if she were no more weight than a lamb, and carried her to the wagon. He lifted her over the side and gently set her in the back among the nest of blankets.
Don't worry, I'll get you back there. You did the hard part. Now you just rest in those warm blankets and let me get you back there.
Jensen was relieved to have her suspicions confirmed. In a way, though, it made her feel slimy, like falling into the swamp again. She was lying to him, using him. That wasn't right, but she didn't know what else to do. Before he turned away, she seized his arm. Tom, aren't you afraid to be helping me when I'm involved in something so
dangerous? He finished for her. What I'm doing is nothing much compared to the risk you took in there.
He gestured to her matted red hair.
I'm nothing special like you, but I'm glad you allowed me to do the small part I could do.
I'm not nearly as special as you think I am. She suddenly felt very small. I'm just doing as I must. Tom pulled blankets from the back up toward her.
I see a lot of people. I don't need the gift to tell you're special.
You know that this is secret business and I can't tell you what it is I'm doing. I'm sorry, but I can't.
Of course you can't. Only special people carry such a special weapon. I'd not expect you to say a word, and I'd not ask.
Thank you, Tom. Feeling even more detestable to be using him as she was, and when he was such a sincere man, Jensen squeezed his arm in gratitude. I can tell you it's important, and you're a huge help in it all. He smiled.
You wrap yourself in those blankets and get yourself dry. We'll soon be back out on the Azeroth Plains. In case you forgot, it's winter out there. Wet as you are, you'll freeze.
Thank you, Tom. You're a good man. Jensen slumped back into the blankets, too exhausted from the ordeal to sit up any longer.
I'm counting on you to tell Lord Rawl, he said with his easy laugh.
Tom quickly doused the fire and then climbed up into the wagon seat. Without guile, he was helping her, at what he had to believe was at least some risk. She feared to think what they might do to him, were he to be caught helping Darkin Rawl's daughter. Here he thought he was helping the Lord Rawl, and he was doing the opposite without even knowing the chance he was taking. Before it was over, she would put him at greater risk yet. Despite her fear that they were racing back to the palace of the man who wanted to kill her, the stomach-churning anxiety of what lay ahead, the disappointment of failing to get the help she had hoped for, the heartbreak of learning all she had from Althea, the cold that was making her wet clothes feel like ice, and the bouncing wagon, Jensen was soon fast asleep. Chapter 25. Swaying atop the seat of the wagon, Jensen watched the immense plateau gradually drawing closer. The morning sun lit the soaring stone walls of the people's palace, warming them in a pastel glow. Although the wind had died down, the morning air remained bone-chilling cold. After the reeking rot of the swamp, she welcomed the flat, dry, stony scent of the open plain. With her fingertips, Jensen rubbed her forehead, trying to soothe her dull, throbbing headache. Tom had driven all night, and she had slept in the back of the bouncing wagon, but not well, nor nearly long enough. At least she had slept some, and they had made it back.
Too bad Lord Rawl isn't there.
Shocked out of her private thoughts, Jensen opened her eyes.
What? Lord Rawl.
Tom gestured off to the right, to the south.
It's too bad he isn't here to help you.
He had pointed south, the direction of the old world. On occasion, Jensen's mother had spoken of the bond connecting the Daharan people with the Lord Rawl. Through its ancient and arcane magic, Daharans were somehow able to sense where the Lord Rawl was. While the strength of the bond varied among Daharan people, they all shared it to some degree. What the Lord Rawl accrued from the bond, Jensen didn't know. She thought of it as yet more chains of domination around his people. In her mother's case, though, it had helped them avoid Darkin Rawl's clutches. From her mother's descriptions, Jensen was aware of the bond, but for some reason never felt anything of it. Perhaps it was so weak in her, as it was with some Daharan people, that she simply couldn't feel it. Her mother said it had nothing to do with one's level of devotion to the Lord Rawl, that it was purely a link of magic, and as such, it would be governed by criteria other than her feelings about the man. Jensen remembered times when her mother would stand in the doorway of their home, or at a window, or pause out in the forest, and stare off toward the horizon. Jensen knew at those times that her mother was sensing Darkin Rawl through the bond, where he was, and how close. It was a shame that it told her only where the Lord Rawl himself was, and not the brutes he sent after them. Tom, being Daharan, took that bond to the Lord Rawl for granted, and had just given Jensen a valuable bit of information. Lord Rawl was not at his palace. That news buoyed her hopes. It was one less obstacle, one less thing to worry about. Lord Rawl was off to the south, probably in the old world, making war on the people there, as Sebastian had told her.
Yes, she finally said. Too bad.
The marketplace below the plateau was already busy. Wisps of dust drifted above the clouds gathered there and over the road south. She wondered if Irma, the sausage lady, was there. Jensen missed Betty. She wanted so much to see the goat's little tail wagging furiously, to hear her bleating with elation at being reunited with her lifelong friend. Tom pointed his team toward the market, to where he had been set up selling his load of wine. Maybe Irma would go to the same place. Jensen would have to leave Betty again in order to go up through the entrance and into the plateau. It would be a long climb up all those stairs, and then she had to find where Sebastian was being held. As the wagon rumbled across the hard pan of the Azeroth Plains, Jensen stared at the empty road that wound its way up the side of the plateau.
Take the road, she said.
What?
Take the road up to the palace.
Are you sure, Jensen? I don't think that's wise. It's only for official business.
Take the road.
In answer, he urged the horses to the left, away from their course toward the market, and toward the base of the road instead. From the corner of her eye, she saw him snatch glances at his inscrutable passenger. Soldiers stationed at the base of the plateau, where the road began its ascent, watched them approach. As the wagon rolled closer, Jensen drew out her knife.
"Don't stop," she said to Tom.
He stared over at her.
"What? I have to. They have bows, you know."
Jensen continued to stare ahead. "Just keep going." When they reached the soldiers, Jensen held the knife out, holding it by the blade so that the handle stuck up above her fist. She kept her arm out stiff and straight, pointed down at the cluster of men, so that they might see what she was announcing. She didn't look at them, but watched the road ahead, showing them the knife as if she couldn't be bothered to talk to them. Every pair of eyes watched that knife handle with the ornate letter R upon it as it flashed past their eyes. None moved to stop the wagon or to knock an arrow. Tom let out a low whistle. The wagon shook and rattled as it rolled onward. The road switched back and forth as it made its way steadily up the plateau. In some places, there was ample room, but occasionally the road narrowed, forcing the wagon to ride close to the dizzying drop. Each tight bend offered them a new vista, a new view of the expanse of the Azrith Plains, spread out far below. Off in the distance, the plains were rimmed by dusky blue mountains. When they arrived at the bridge, they finally did have to stop. The bridge was pulled up. Her faith in herself and her plan faltered as she realized that this, and not her bold bluff, was probably the reason the soldiers below had let her pass so easily. They knew she couldn't get over the chasm unless the guards lowered the bridge. They knew she couldn't simply barge into the palace, and at the same time, they didn't have to challenge a woman who had what very well might be an official pass of sorts from the Lord Rahl himself. Worse yet, she now saw how the soldiers had also isolated, in a place without escape or hope of rescue by reinforcements, people they deemed potential intruders. Any hostile foray would be stopped cold here and in all likelihood captured or killed on the spot. It was no wonder Tom had advised against using the road up. Stimulated by the effort of the climb, the big horses tossed their heads at the interruption. One man stepped up in front and took control of the horse's bits to keep them still. Soldiers approached the side of the wagon. Jensen sat on the cliffside, and although she saw men guarding the rear quarter on her side, most of the men approached on Tom's side.
"Good day, Sergeant," Tom called out.
The man scrutinized the inside of the wagon and, after finding it empty, looked up at the two in the seat.
"Good day."
Jensen knew that this was no time for her to become timid. If she failed here, everything would be lost. Not only would Sebastian have no hope, but she would likely join him in a dungeon. She could not afford to lose her nerve. When the soldiers were close enough, she reached past Tom to hold the knife down toward the sergeant of the guards, showing him the handle, as if she were flashing a royal pass. "Drop the bridge," she said before he had a chance to ask them anything. The sergeant took in the knife handle before meeting her glare.
"What's your business?"
Sebastian had told her how to bluff. He had explained how she had done it her whole life, that she was a natural at it. Now she had to do it with deliberate intent if she was to save him and get out alive herself. Despite how fast her heart pounded, she showed the man a stern but empty expression. "Lord Rahl's business, lower the bridge." She thought that he was taken back a bit by her tone, or possibly he was worried by her unexpected words. She could see his level of caution rise, tensing his features. Nevertheless, he stood his ground.
"I need a little more than that, ma'am."
Jensen twirled the knife, weaving it over and under between her fingers, the polished metal flashing in the sunlight as it spun until it came to an abrupt halt with the handle upright in her fist once more, the ornate letter R showing to the soldier. In a deliberate manner, she pushed the hood of her cloak back, exposing her fall of red hair to the morning sunlight and the men's stares. She could see in their eyes that her implication had been clearly understood. "I know you have a job to do," Jensen said with terrible calm. "But so do I. I'm on official business for Lord Rahl. I'm sure you can appreciate how displeased Lord Rahl would be with me were I to discuss his business with everyone who asked about it. Therefore, I have no intention of doing so. But I can tell you that I wouldn't be here if it were not a matter of life or death. You are wasting my precious time, Sergeant. Now, lower the bridge."
"And what might be your name, ma'am?"
Jensen leaned farther past Tom in order to more directly scowl at the sergeant. "Unless you lower that bridge, Sergeant, and right now, you will forever after remember me as Trouble, sent by Lord Rahl himself." The sergeant, backed by a few dozen men with pikes along with crossbows, swords, and axes, didn't flinch. He looked at Tom.
"What's your part in this?"
Tom shrugged.
"Just driving the wagon. Were I you, Sergeant, this is one lady I'd not want to be delaying."
"Is that so?"
"It is," Tom said with conviction.
The sergeant gazed long and hard into Tom's eyes. Finally, he considered Jensen again, then turned and rolled his hand, motioning a man to lower the bridge. Jensen gestured with her knife toward the palace up the road. "How may I find the place where we hold prisoners?" As the gears started clattering and the bridge began to descend, he turned back to Jensen.
"Inquire with the guards at the top. They can direct you, ma'am."
"Thank you," Jensen said with finality, sitting back up straight and putting her eyes ahead, waiting for the bridge to lower. Once it had thudded into place, the sergeant signaled them ahead. Tom nodded his thanks and flicked the reins. Jensen had to play the part through the whole way, if this were to have a chance of working. She found that her performance was aided by her very real anger. She was disturbed, though, that Tom had played some part in the success of the bluff. She wouldn't have his help for all of it. She decided that it would be wise to keep her anger out and in plain view of the other guards.
"You want to see the prisoners?" Tom asked.
She realized that she had never said why she had to return to the palace. "Yes, they've taken a man prisoner by mistake. I've come to see that he's released." Tom checked the horses with the reins, keeping them wide to negotiate the wagon around a switchback.
"Ask for Captain Lerner," he said at last.
Jensen glanced over at him, surprised that he had offered a name rather than an objection. "A friend of yours?" The reins moved ever so slightly with practiced precision, guiding the horses around the bend.
"I don't know if I'd call him a friend. I've dealt with him a time or two."
"Wine?" Tom smiled.
"No. Other things."
He apparently didn't intend to say what other things. Jensen watched the sweep of the Azrith Plains and distant mountains as they rose up the side of the plateau. Somewhere beyond those plains, those mountains, lay freedom. At the top, the road leveled out before a great gate through the massive outer wall of the palace. The guards stationed before the gate there waved them through, then blew whistles and a short series of notes to others, unseen, beyond the walls. Jensen realized that they had not arrived unannounced. She nearly gasped as they cleared the short tunnel through the massive outer wall. Inside, expansive grounds spread out before them. Lawns and hedges bordered the road that curved toward a hill of steps well over a half mile away. The grounds inside the walls were teeming with soldiers in smart uniforms of leather and chainmail, covered with wool tunics. Many, with pikes held upright at precisely the same angle, lined the route. These men were not loafing about. They weren't the kind to be surprised by what came up the road. Tom took it all in casually. Jensen tried to keep her eyes pointed ahead. She tried to look indifferent amid such splendor. Before the hill of steps awaited a reception party of guards over 100 strong. Tom pulled the wagon into the pocket they'd formed, blocking the road. Jensen saw, standing on the steps overlooking the soldiers, 3 men in robes. 2 wore silver-colored robes. Between them, 1 step higher, stood an older man wearing white. Both hands held in the opposite sleeves trimmed in golden-colored braiding that shimmered in the sunlight. Tom set the brake on the wagon as a soldier took control of the horses to keep them from moving. Before Tom could begin climbing down, Jensen put a hand on his arm to stop him. "This is as far as you go.
But you..."
"You've done enough. You've helped with the part I needed. I can handle it from here on out, on my own." His measured, blue-eyed gaze swept over the guards standing around the wagon. He seemed reluctant to accede.
"I don't think it could hurt if I went along."
"I'd rather you go back to your brothers." He glanced to her hand on his arm before looking up into her eyes.
"If that's your wish."
His voice lowered to little more than a whisper.
"Will I see you again?"
It sounded more like a request than a question. Jensen could not bring herself to deny such a simple thing, not after all he had done for her. "We'll need to go back down to the market to buy some horses. I'll stop by your place first, right after I'm done inside with getting my friend released."
"Promise?"
Under her breath, she said,
"I have to pay you for your services, remember?"
His lopsided grin reappeared.
I've never met anyone like you, Jensen.
He noticed the soldiers, remembering then where he was, and cleared his throat.
I'm thankful you let me do my small part, man. I will hold you to your word on the rest of it.
He had risked enough by bringing her this far, a risk he hadn't known he was taking. Jensen fervently hoped that in her brief smile he would see how genuinely grateful she was for his help, since she didn't think she could afford to keep her promise to see him before they left. With his powerful hand gripping her arm to halt her for a final word, he spoke in a low but solemn voice,
"Steel against steel, that he may be the magic against magic."
Jensen had absolutely no idea what he meant. Staring into his intense gaze, she answered with a single, firm nod. Not wanting to let the soldier suspect that she might really be mild-mannered, Jensen turned away and climbed down from the wagon to stand before the man who looked to be in charge. She allowed him only a perfunctory look at the knife before replacing it in the sheath at her belt. "I need to see the man in charge of any prisoners you're holding. Captain Lerner, if memory serves me." His brow drew together.
"You want to see the captain of the prison guards?"
Jensen didn't know his rank. She didn't know much of anything about military matters, except that for most of her life, soldiers like these had been trying to kill her. He could be a general or, for all she knew, a corporal. As she considered the man, his dress, his age, his bearing, she reasoned that he definitely looked more than a corporal. She feared to make a mistake with his rank, though, and decided it would be healthier to ignore it. Jensen dismissed his question with a curt flick of her hand.
"I haven't got all day. I'll need an escort, of course. You and some of your men will do, I suppose."
As she started up the steps, she glanced over her shoulder and saw Tom wink at her. It lifted her heart. The soldiers had parted to let his wagon leave, so he flicked the reins and urged his big horses away. Jensen hated to see his comforting presence go. She turned her mind from her fears.
"You," she said, gesturing to the man in the white robes, "take me to where you hold prisoners."
The man, the top of his head showing through his thinning gray hair, lifted a finger, sending most of the milling guards back to their posts. The officer of mysterious rank and a dozen of his soldiers remained behind her.
"May I see the knife?"
the man in the white robes asked in a gentle voice. Jensen suspected that this man, able to dismiss guards of rank, must be someone important. Important people in Lord Rawl's palace might have the gift. It occurred to her that if he did have the gift, he would see her as a whole in the world. It also occurred to her that this was a very poor time to blurt out a confession, and an even worse time to try to bolt for the gate. She had to hope that he was a palace official and that he wasn't gifted. Many of the soldiers were still watching. Jensen casually pulled her knife from the sheath at her belt. Without a word, but showing a face that clearly said she was running out of patience, she held the knife up before the man's eyes so that he could see the ornate R on the handle. He looked down his nose at the weapon before returning his attention to her.
"And this is real?"
"No," Jensen snapped. "I smelted it while sitting around the campfire last night. Are you going to take me to where you hold prisoners or not?" Showing no reaction, the man graciously held out a hand.
"If you would follow me this way, madam."
Chapter 26. The palace official's white robes flowed out behind him as he ascended the hill of steps. Flanked by the two men in silver robes, Jensen remained what she judged to be an imperious distance behind the men. When the man in white noticed how she had lagged behind, he slowed to allow her to catch up. She slowed her pace accordingly, maintaining the distance. He nervously checked behind, then slowed more. She slowed yet more, until the three robed men, Jensen, and the soldiers behind her were all pausing ponderously on each step. When they reached the next landing on the broad, sunlit marble steps, the man glanced over his shoulder again. Jensen gestured impatiently. He finally understood that she had no intention of walking with him, but expected him to lead the procession. The man acceded, quickening his steps, allowing her to have the distance she demanded, resigned to being what amounted to her lowly crier. The officer of unknown rank and his dozen soldiers climbed the stairs with mincing steps, trying to duplicate the distance she maintained in front of her. It was unanticipated and awkward for her escorts. She wanted it to be. Like her red hair, the distraction gave them something to think about, something to worry about. At intervals, the smooth ascent of marble stairs was broken by broad landings that gave the legs a rest before continuing up. At the top of the stairs, tall, embossed brass doors were set back beyond colossal columns. The entire front of the palace looming over them was one of the grandest sights Jensen had ever seen, but her mind was not on the intricate architecture of the entrance. She was thinking about what lay inside. They passed the shadows of the towering columns and swept on through the doorway. The dozen soldiers still trailed in her wake, their weapons, belts, and mail jangling. The sound of their boots on the polished marble floor echoed off the walls of a grand entry lined with fluted pillars. Deeper into the palace, people going about their business or standing in twos and threes talking or strolling the balconies paused to watch the unusual procession, paused to see the officials in their white and silver robes and a dozen guards at a respectful distance escorting a woman with red hair. By her outfit, especially in comparison to the neat, clean dress of the others, it was obvious that she had just traveled in. Rather than being embarrassed by her clothes, Jensen was pleased that they added to the sense of urgent mystery. The reaction of the people, too, was bound to infect her escort. After the man in white whispered to the two in silver robes, they nodded and ran on ahead, vanishing around a corner. The guards followed at her measured distance. The procession wound through a maze of small passageways and funneled down narrow service stairs. Jensen and her escorts made a number of turns through intersecting halls, along dim corridors, to doors opening onto wide halls, and intermittently descended a variety of stairs, until she could no longer keep track of their route. By the dusty condition of some of the dingy stairs and musty-smelling, apparently little-used halls, she realized that the man in white robes was taking her on a shortcut through the palace in order to get her to where she wanted to go as swiftly as possible. This, too, was reassuring, because it meant they took her seriously. That helped her confidence in playing the part. She told herself that she was important. She was a personal representative of Lord Rawl himself, and she was not going to be deterred by anyone. They were here for no other purpose but to assist her. It was their job, their duty. Since it was hopeless trying to keep track of all the turns and twists they took, she put her mind instead to the matter at hand, to what she would do and say, going over it all in her head. Jensen reminded herself that no matter what condition Sebastian was in, she had to keep to her plan. Acting surprised, bursting into tears, falling on him, wailing, would do neither of them any good. She hoped that when she saw him, she could remember all that. The man in white checked his charge before turning down a stone stairwell. Dull red rust showed through chipped paint on the iron railing. The uncomfortably steep flight of stairs twisted downward, finally ending in a lower passageway lit by the eerie wavering light from torches in short floor stands, rather than by lamps and reflectors that were used to light the way above. The two men in silver robes who had gone on ahead were waiting for them at the bottom. Hazy smoke hung near the low beams of the ceiling, leaving the place reeking of burning pitch. She could see her breath in the cold air. Jensen felt, viscerally, how deep they were in the people's palace. She had a brief unpleasant memory of what it felt like sinking down beneath the dark, bottomless water of the swamp. She felt a similar pressure on her chest in the depths of the palace as she imagined the inconceivable weight overhead. Down the murky stone corridor to the right, she thought she could see evenly spaced doors. In some of the doors, it looked like there might be fingers gripping the edge of small openings. From down that hall in the darkness came a dry, echoing cough. As she looked off toward the unseen source of the sound, she had the feeling that this was a place where men were sent not for punishment, but to die. Before an iron-bound door sealing off the corridor to the left stood a powerfully built man, feet spread, hands clasped behind his back, chin held high. His bearing, his size, the way his cut-stone gaze locked on her, made Jensen's breath falter. She wanted to run. Why did she think she could do this? After all, who was she? Just a nobody. Althea said that wasn't true unless she made it so herself. Jensen wished she had as much faith in her own abilities as Althea seemed to have in her. Looking Jensen in the eye, the man in white robes held a handout in introduction. Captain Lerner, as you requested. He turned to the captain and held his other hand out toward Jensen. A personal envoy of Lord Rawl, so she says. The captain gave the man in white a grim smile. Thank you, she said to the man who had escorted her. That will be all. The man in white opened his mouth to speak, then, as he met the look in her eyes, thought better of it and bowed. With his arms held out like a hen herding chicks, he ushered the other two in silver and then the soldiers away with him. I'm looking for a man I heard was taken prisoner, she told the big man standing before the door.
For what reason?
Someone messed up. He was taken prisoner by mistake.
Who says it was a mistake?
Jensen lifted the knife from its sheath at her belt and held it by the blade, nonchalantly showing the man the handle. I do. His iron eyes briefly took in the design on the handle. Still, he stood in the same relaxed stance, barring the iron door to the passageway beyond. Jensen twirled the knife through her fingers, caught it by the handle, and returned it smoothly to its sheath at her belt.
I used to carry one, too, he said with a nod toward the knife she had returned to its sheath, few years back.
But not any longer? She applied gentle pressure to the crossguard until she felt the knife click home. The soft sound echoed back from the darkness behind her. He shrugged.
It gets wearing, having your life at risk for Lord Rawl all the time.
Jensen feared he might ask her something about the Lord Rawl, something she couldn't answer, but should be able to. She sought to block that possibility. You served under Darkin Rawl, then? That was before my time. It must have been a great honor to have known him.
Obviously, you didn't know the man.
She feared she had just failed her first test. She had thought that everyone who served would be a loyal follower. She thought it would be safe to go with that assumption. It wasn't. Captain Lerner turned his head and spat. He looked back at her with challenge.
Darkin Rawl was a twisted bastard. I'd have liked to put his knife between his ribs and twisted it good.
Despite her anxiety, she showed him no more than a cool expression. Then why didn't you?
When the whole world is crazy, it doesn't pay to be sane. I finally told them I was getting too old and took a job down here. Someone far better than I ever was finally sent Darkin Rawl to the Keeper.
Jensen was thrown off by such an unexpected sentiment. She didn't know if the man had really hated Darkin Rawl, or if he was only saying he did in front of her so as to show loyalty to the new Lord Rawl, Richard, who had killed his father and assumed power. She tried to gather her wits without being obvious. Well, Tom said you weren't stupid. I guess he knew what he was talking about. The captain laughed, a spontaneous, deep, rolling sound that unexpectedly made Jensen smile at the incongruity of it coming from a man who otherwise looked like death's darling.